Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words. This is the first episode I'm recording in a little bit. I got the chance to go to New York and see my sister Emily get married, and it was definitely my second favorite wedding I've ever been to. The wife would murder me if I said that it was my favorite, so you can do the math on the rest of that, but it was great to be in New York. The food in New York is unparalleled. Sincerely, it's so freaking good. The people are great. I miss it. But it's good to be back, and I'm at sunny Adobe in sunny NoHo Burbank. And Katie Stein, who is behind the scenes, she is going to be doing an interview on my show here. So I'm relearning the English language. I'm excited. And Katie does a lot of stuff. I think she specializes in the graphic design world, but I might be misinformed. We've spoken. We had a really nice breakfast last year, and I scheduled this about 33 years ago. So it's rad that she's doing this show. So thank you, Katie Stein. Thank you all gazillions listeners of Waldman's Words. And thank you, which is kind of twofold because I thank the listeners of Waldman's Words and I thanked you. So I thanked you twice and probably Katie Stein three times because... All right, I'm going to shut up. Math is stupid. Next week, we've got David Bakula on the show. David works for Nielsen, and this is something that I strongly recommend you all listen to when this episode is up because you are going to learn a lot, which is the purpose of this show. I try to be informative and semi-funny, and I definitely have a semi. All right, sorry, stupid. We've got Leah Urbano on the following week, and Leah has worked in the management space for quite some time. She's a sweetheart, and she works in heavy music. So nice people work in the heaviest sectors. And I just want to say quickly that sometimes the poppiest sectors are not the nicest. Food for thought. The following week, we have Chris Hornbrook, who is a drum god. I don't have musicians on the show as often as the behind-the-scenes people, but he's going to be talking about, I guess, being a hired gun, which there's a documentary about that on Netflix, a session guy, what have you, but two bands that everyone listening to this show know about or knows about or knowing about or whatever. Senses Fail, he was the drummer for Senses Fail, and Poison the Well. And currently, he drums with Danny Harrison, who is George Harrison's son. And I wear a Beatles t-shirt at least once a week. And that's, I guess, just the tip of the iceberg on why they're so important to me. And then the following week, we've got ska legend Tazy Phillips. And I don't know if you realize this, but there's been a lot of ska in the news and the quote-unquote news and the fake news lately because there was an incredible festival called Back to the Beach, and Tazy actually was a part of that festival. And so we could talk about that. And also, he actually was pivotal in launching bands like No Doubt and Sublime. So it's a good day. Stick around for Waldman's Words every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock, which is technically the start of the evening, I guess, Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is, I think, the start of the night, and rerunning every single Sunday morning at 5 a.m., which is definitely fucking early, and 8 a.m., which is definitely fucking early. 5 a.m. on Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern time. And I think Katie's from the East Coast. I mean, we're going to learn a lot together. So represent, go nuts. Hello. After 73 minutes of line checks, we have Katie Stein in the studio. Thank you.
No problem. Happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here. We scheduled this in like 2003, so this is really cool that you're here.
Yeah, basically met like a year ago, and you were like, let's do this next year. I was like, I guess, sure, and now we're here.
I put my fist in the air just now. You can't see that. I'm not trying to be cool with my scheduling way out, obviously. If you listen to the show, you know I'm not cool, but I schedule way out because I get this room once a week and I revel in it. And when I met you, I thought you'd be a good guest because...
Thank you.
Well, thank you for doing this. I feature, as you know, lots of managers, lots of people in publishing, people in many worlds. But you, when I met you, were doing a lot of behind the scenes work that in areas that I was not very familiar in. So I think that if you impart your wisdom or quote unquote wisdom to some young girl in Boca Raton who wants to do what you're doing, then it's a success. But cool. let's go to the beginning. 718 area code.
Yep, I am from New York. Born and raised in New York City.
Fist in the air again.
And New York's best city in the world.
And every single person in New York agrees with you. It's a very ethnocentric. I think New York City is the best city in the world too, actually, but we're biased.
It's the best.
And you're not 212. You're 718.
Yeah, so outer borough girl.
Damn right. I was actually reared in Flushing, but I lived there till I was 4. And then I moved to Long Island when I was 4, so my wife is like, you're not from fucking Queens. You really aren't.
That's pretty much Long Island there.
Shit. But Queens is technically on Long Island. Just saying. So, obviously when I think of music in that area, I think of the Ramones.
Mm,
but
sure.
The least confident, yes. she stuck her tongue out at me. So, you guys can't see it, but there's fervor. No. So, when you were growing up in New York City, which, as we know, is the best city in the world, or know/believe.
Yeah.
What was your first exposure to music? Like, was it a family thing, or was it something that you just did on your own?
Yeah, I mean, my parents definitely exposed me to a lot of what they loved. So they were big folk music fans.
Wow.
And, I grew up going to this upstate festival called Clearwater.
I don't know
festival.
About it.
Yeah, it's Clearwater Music and Arts. It was something that started in, like, maybe the 60s or 70s by Pete Seeger.
Okay, I know him.
Yes, and he's like my dad's hero. So, kind of was exposed to music through that route.
When you were really young,
yeah.
You went?
Yeah, went there from probably 2 years old to 16.
So you were that kid being held at a music festival?
Yeah, totally.
Now they have these, we're wearing headphones now. Now kids, and I don't understand these parents, have their kids wearing ginormous headphones at super loud shows, but they're like, maybe one-fifth of the age that you were when you started going to Clearwater.
Crazy.
Yep, kids today and parents. So who were the acts that played at this festival?
Pete Seeger would play.
I assume that, but you never know.
Like, it was also, family-friendly. Like, I think
Raffy.
There was some kiddie group called, the Billy Goats that we would see every lunch. I don't know. Like, a lot of
Weird Al
stuff.
Was my gateway drug to music, so, nice. I mean, whatever gets you into it. And even if you're still involved in the children's music space, which I do not think you are, you know what? It's people performing songs that they wrote or someone else wrote for them.
Yeah.
My first concert was The Who.
Nice.
Yeah. So I agree.
That's pretty cool.
I think it is too. And I think a lot of people, because I'm 37, they always say that their first concert was New Kids and they're kind of ashamed. I'm like, that's rad. I wish that I got to see New Kids. Anyway, speaking of New Kids, you're here. So did you end up playing music on your own when you were 2? Were you like recorder and triangle?
Nah. I never really played much myself. I mean, I was in band in middle school, but I wasn't into playing. I just wanted to get into the behind the scenes and
you knew at a young age.
Knew probably high school, end of high school. But what really got me excited to join the music business was when I started volunteering with this organization called Lifebeat, Music Fights HIV. And
please plug that organization.
Yeah, it was a really great opportunity for me as a high school kid to start going to concerts on my own. And I would go into the city and raise awareness about HIV and AIDS at shows. It was Knitting Factory and Irving Plaza.
Was it Knitting Factory in Manhattan at the time?
Yeah.
Your eyes lit up. Yes.
I loved that place.
That was my favorite venue to play in. And RIP. I actually had the chance to play at the one in Brooklyn too when I was a stupid musician guy. But the one in New York City with the 3 different, oh my God.
Love that place.
I love that place. They get noise complaints all the time, which is part of the reason they moved. Because that area got so bougie and gentrified that no one wanted to live by a loud rock venue. So I know.
So disappointing. I love that place.
The city sleeps.
Yeah.
So tell me more about this though, because obviously when I was in high school, I'm a little bit older than you, but when I was in high school going to shows, the big one that was at a lot of the shows I went to was PETA. At the time, PETA was really growing, so they had that at a lot of booths. What did you do exactly?
So I would hand out condoms at shows and get people to talk to me about HIV/AIDS awareness and try to hand out pamphlets about the information and just make sure that people are being safe. That was like the big goal of Lifebeat.
How old were you when you did that?
16, 17.
Were your parents or your family cool with you doing that?
Yeah, they didn't care.
That's awesome. Yeah, some people might not be.
Yeah, there was like an HIV AIDS awareness club at my high school that I found out about.
There's an HIV awareness club?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like I was also part of the Gay Straight Alliance, so it was like sort of connected with that.
So very conservative-minded.
Definitely. Yeah, not.
Yeah, samesies. but whatever, believe what you want, just don't hurt people. Okay, so anyway, but that's awesome that you were involved. Were there any bands that you knew about that championed that cause? Because I know some bands actually were anti that cause, believe it or not, around that time, which is so
weird.
There
was like one or two like Christian bands that didn't let us like have our booth at the shows, but for the most part, people were pretty supportive. I mean, it was venue based, so we were working at specific venues, and we had the relationships with those places in New York.
Fist bump, boom. That's awesome.
Yeah,
so that you were involved in activism.
Yeah, and that's kind of gave me the taste of like what it's like to be behind the scenes at a concert, and I would get to the show before it started, before the doors open, and like set up, and kind of just got to see like, yeah, what a security briefing was like, and I don't know, I just thought it was really cool, and then ended up going to college to study music industry.
What school?
Northeastern University.
Okay, yeah, Boston.
Mm-hmm.
My wife went to school in Brandeis.
Oh, nice.
And when my sister was visiting colleges, we visited Northeastern, Skidmore, and like the UMass area, so I know.
Where'd she end up?
She ended up at University. I love that you're interviewing me. on Waldman's Words, Katie Stein interviews. I went to Michigan. Emily, my sister, who just got married, who I speak about in the intro, she went to University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
So not East Coast.
Did not end up.
But Northeastern has a lot of people who are, like, especially that area, like the Northeastern, like Emerson crew, has a lot of people who are pursuing entertainment.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of being an alumni of Northeastern. There's a lot of people really killing it out there.
Shout out to New England Clam Chowder.
Yeah. So I started out as a music industry major and then went into marketing and graduated with a business degree.
So you started out in industry and you shifted to marketing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn? Because this is something I often talk about on this show.
Yeah.
In the industry curriculum, per se, what did you learn? Like what kind of classes did they have? I took two music classes in college and I got a degree in English, and now I speak fluently. So, like, what did you learn?
Yeah, so the kind of base curriculum of the music industry program was, like, two intro courses where you learn about, like, mechanical rights and some stuff with music supervision, and then you have, like, the marketing and promo classes, and I just was more drawn to the marketing side of things, and if I'd continued in the music industry curriculum, there were like historical traditions were the name of these like four classes you had to take. And it was like kind of the history of music and
like appreciation like, per se.
Yeah. Like there was music theory.
Circle of fifths, bro.
Yeah. So I took like the intro to music theory and then I just decided that I'd rather be more focused on the business side.
Well, I feel that college is a lot of knowing what you don't want to do, you know, for some people. And I think it's good that, I mean, first of all, I admire you for knowing that you want to work behind the scenes at such a young age. I didn't know until 2015, and I'm 130 years old. But no, it's 120. But no, it's cool. A lot of people that I have on the show don't know at so young. So power to you. And so Northeastern, I'm just trying to think if I know. I mean, I know this girl named Hannah Barham who studied pharmacy there. But, like, was there a really good community of people who were like-minded?
Yeah, there definitely was. There was a club for the Music Industry Association that I was very involved in. So I, like, brought bands to the school and kind of got...
What bands? What bands?
I did a show with a great big pile of leaves for them. We brought Steel Train.
Steel Train and Jack Antonoff is now king of the world.
Yeah.
It's pretty badass.
That was an awesome show.
And Evan Winokur manages 30 Seconds to Mars.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, my band Lido Beach actually, the day Obama got elected, the good day, in 2008, again, politics, whatever, it's my fucking show, Lido Beach played with Steel Train.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so was this like drive-through era Steel Train, or was this like more like them edging their own path? Like, what year was it?
It was 2011.
Okay, so they're long. I mean, their self-titled was already out by then. Okay, cool. I mean, I love that band. So
yeah, they were awesome.
I mean, Trampoline was one of my favorite albums of the last decade. So shout out to Steel Train and shout out to you for even making me smile and think of them. What Who else did you work with there?
Who else did we bring to Northeastern? Well, there was also the big concert at the end of the year that I would do like some promo for. We had like Jimmy Eat World.
Okay, well, now that's my favorite band. That's not the Beatles. Okay, that's not.
Third Eye Blind.
Okay, so some really big names.
Yeah.
And really Steel Train was like successful, obviously. Like they were a kind of band that could sell out the Troubadour. And venue. I mean, that's takes a lot to be able to do that. So you've worked with some bands of moderate size and major size.
Yeah, well, that was just like this. The college experience.
Not my college experience. My college experience was playing in a band called Blue Delusion, where we played three sets, and 2/3 of the material were cover songs, including Jimmy Eat World songs. So,
nice.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone gets to where they get to some way.
I like that name, Blue Delusion.
Thank you. I actually hated it. I wanted to be called 2½ Jews. And I got outvoted by 1½ Jews. So I've never put it that way. Shout out to Dan Ferris and Mitch Bickman for saying that. But Blue Delusion, they really liked it. And it worked well because we were Go Blue University of Michigan. Okay. So, well, thank you for saying that. You are actually one of the first people. You're definitely the first person to say that to me this decade. So air fist bump. So I guess you graduate. What year did you graduate? Because you said you booked Steel Train around 2011.
Yeah, I graduated in 2013.
Okay.
So Northeastern has a program where you're on co-op for 6 months working full-time.
I think that's such a brilliant thing.
It's really great. It really helped me like launch my career. So I started, my first co-op was at Glassnote Records.
Okay.
And I got to really dive into a lot of different things there and learn from a lot of different people.
Where was that?
In New York.
Okay.
So I would like
back to your favorite city.
I would go back home and work in the music industry for 6 months at a time during college, which really helped me.
And get a full semester of credit?
It wasn't like credit in the traditional sense that you get in a lot of colleges. It was just a cooperative learning, so you had to get like experiential credits.
Okay.
And that's what the co-op fulfilled.
I mean, that's really smart. I know that Drexel does stuff like this. I think Emerson does stuff like this. And I want to advocate to those. Obviously, college is not for everyone. I'm a huge defender of it. But if you're in college, I think it's a really great idea to intern and to join co-ops and to join as many organizations as possible because you never fucking know.
Yeah. It was really good opportunity. And I was at Glassnote at just like the perfect time. It was right when Mumford & Sons put out their debut album.
Wait, who were they? Oh, my God. Ginormous.
Yeah, so I got to help the release of
Was that Sign War? Yes.
Yeah, it was awesome. That was really fun. And it was like one of their first trips to the U.S.
Did you feel like a little lion woman?
A little bit. Yeah, it was really cool getting to, like, help them with all their promo while they were in town and kind of jump from place to place as they were promoting the album.
And then eventually playing, like, Madison Square Garden, headlining Coachella. Yeah. Like, I mean, I remember what's crazy is, like, and actually you brought up the activism. And when I think of activism, I think of Warped Tour because they have all those booths. But you know what band really, really started championing them? A Day to Remember, which is weird because like you don't think A Day to Remember and you don't think Mumford & Sons like ever. But I remember reading an interview and the singer Jeremy McKinnon was like, I mean, I've never seen a crowd respond to a band like they did with Mumford & Sons. Yeah. And obviously they carved their own thing and now there's tens of gazillions different followers.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's cool that you were part of that.
That was really fun.
And I'm not sighing anymore from that. So I guess when you were doing stuff, what else did you do at Glassnote?
So Sign No More came out towards the beginning of my internship, and then in the good middle timing. Of it, yeah, then Two Door Cinema Club came out with their, I think it was their debut, Tourist History.
They're big in the UK, right?
Yeah, well, they're from Ireland.
Okay.
And definitely, you know, kind of sprung out from there, and we were promoting that. Glassnote had them in the U.S., so they had, like, a tour, and they were putting out Tourist History at the time, so I got to work on that album. And Justin Nazuka came out with an album that month too. I think Temper Trap was coming out with something like right after the end of my internship, so I kind of got to be.
These are all very prolific acts.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was a really good time at that company for me, and I got to, you know, meet a lot of people just by answering the phones. You know, you would build relationships, and that was really cool.
So you're a college student mm-hmm. working on some of these records. Can you tell me something aside from answering the phones that you did specifically for Nizuka? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, so I was the social media intern, which is how I got started into the digital marketing world. And this is, like, 2010, so just, like, Twitter was still kind of newish
at the
time.
What is this?
Yeah, and I was able to help, like, build out the Twitter account for the company. I remember, like, hosting a couple contests where people would, like, send in lyrics and we'd, you know, get them.
Did you orchestrate these or did they kind of, I mean, because you're a college student, you obviously have to earn their trust. Did mm-hmm. you, like, pitch these ideas or did they just tell you, like, we need you to do this?
I think it would be, like, a combination. So, like, they would say, oh, we need some sort of contesting element this week, and I would maybe come up with a few ideas and then, you know, we'd go with whatever.
It's cool that you even had some creative input.
Yeah, it was really, it was a small enough company that I really got to, you know, get my feet wet and get involved in a lot of different aspects of the wow. album promotion.
See, I mean, you are, as I said, off camera, you're a tough nut to crack in terms of finding, maybe due to the fact that your name is probably the third most common Jewish name in the world, but I can say that as a Waldman, but I had no idea. I when I met you, because we've met once, I said this briefly in the intro, we met through a girl named Kristen, mm-hmm. who, I don't know if she was your mentor or mentee or whatever the relationship was.
I adore her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she and I work at a label called Legend, and she said, you got to meet this girl, Katie. So I did, and I knew that at the time you were working with Roc Nation. We can get to that. Yeah. But I had no idea that you had so much experience, like your resume looked badass. So
thank
good
you.
For you.
Yeah.
No, and I do not say this to everyone. So I guess when, and shout out to Kristen for facilitating.
Yes, love Kristen.
Hi. You could tune into her episode, which actually is a special one as well because we touch on a very important topic of addiction. And I feel that she is a really good voice for that. So scroll back on iTunes or the Adobe website and check that episode out immediately after you listen to this one. But back to Katie, the other K in my life right now. I guess tell me about what made you come out here, because we are in Los Angeles. We're actually in Burbank, North Hollywood right now. When you were done with college, did you move straight here or did you go into the city or have your, like, did you end up getting a job at Glassnote?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I went back to New York, and I only moved out to L.A. last year.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I moved from Boston. I was in Boston working at the House of Blues, actually, right when I graduated. And then I found a full-time gig down in New York with Roc Nation. And that was
I love saying
first
down in New York. People don't say that.
Yeah, from Boston.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first full-time job out of college. It was a really incredible opportunity to, you know, dive right into things. And it was the digital marketing department, and that's really where my career's been in digital marketing. So
is there a lot of graphic design involved with that?
There's some, yeah. I know you referred to me as a graphic designer on last week's episode.
Yeah,
Oh, it's okay. There's definitely some graphic design, but I wouldn't consider myself a graphic designer.
Well, I apologize.
It's okay. But yeah, I focus on digital marketing, which has, you have to make sure you have some graphic design skills for that. It definitely helps to have Photoshop on your resume and
which I do not.
Yeah, I've developed some Photoshop skills. I'm not like a total pro, but I am adept at making social skins and assisting with that kind of stuff.
Well, good. I mean, obviously, it's important to have all these boxes to check off. Yeah. So we're going to take a short break, and hopefully I'll make at least 17 more mistakes on this episode of Stein's Girled with Watt Skaldman. Stick around, enjoy, and we're going to learn about, I guess, the starts of Roc Nation, which I did know, and then moving to the dark side of LA. So stick around.
Cool.
Hello. We are back with the CEO of Interscope, Katie Stein. Thank you so very much for coming.
That is so not true.
Okay, it's not true. Well, I just told you that I hope not to screw up. No, that was actually an intentional one. Katie Stein is someone who knows a lot about the marketing world, and I hope that you all 23 gazillion of you listening right now are learning a little something too. So tell me about Roc Nation.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll start with how I got that job at Roc Nation.
You could start with whatever you want.
Cool. So that was my first full-time job out of college. And my last internship was at Madison Square Garden.
Small-time venue.
When I was there, really got a lot of really cool experience. And I met someone at a show at Radio City Music Hall, which is owned by MSG. So I was at Radio City, like, tweeting along the show for the Radio City handle.
Oh, that's some power.
Yeah, so that would be my main, like, responsibility was kind of
like live, Team Rockette.
Live shows. It wasn't necessarily all the Rockettes. They have concerts there, too. So it was a, I think it was a state radio show.
Oh, yeah. Wait, don't tell me. That was Dispatch.
Yes.
Yay! Yes.
And we
Encyclopedia.
Yeah, and I was tweeting along to the show, and this guy, Mark Jordian, who is awesome, he gave me the set list, and it helped me, like, do my job for the night, so I could say, like, oh, the song's coming up next, whatever. And he is the one who introduced me to my first supervisor at Roc Nation. And that is how I got my start there as a general
marketing coordinator. People to people to people. Yeah. It's a people business. Exactly. You coming to this Adobe interview might have introduced you to... Brett Dab. I'm just pointing at the wall. You never really freaking know. So
a lot of cool names on this wall.
Yeah, there's quite a few. And the most cool name on the wall is Adobe Radio. There's quite a few things that remind me where I am right now, in case you forget. But so, wow, Madison Square Garden. You know who I learned has sold out Madison Square Garden more than anyone?
Elton John.
Nope. Very, very close. Billy Joel.
Yes, that makes sense.
And do you know who has sold out the Staples Center more than anyone? I don't know how happy this is going to make you.
Go for it.
Taylor Swift.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Some people, it's just insane.
She's popular.
Yeah, I heard her. She's shaking it off. But so Madison Square Garden, Radio City to Roc Nation.
Yeah. And I spent 4 years at Roc Nation.
So like college.
Yeah, kind of like a second college. Definitely learned probably more than I even did in college.
I would argue that the first year I graduated college, I learned more than the entire 22 years before it combined.
Yeah. So that was really an awesome opportunity. I was went from digital marketing coordinator to manager, got to work with, so many different artists.
So you started as a digital.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about, I guess, a typical day, because for those of you listening, Roc Nation is an enterprise.
Yeah.
So explain, obviously, I don't know if any of you have heard this small-time rapper named Jay-Z, who's probably smayed the venue Madison Square Garden a few times. But tell me about Roc Nation, if you can, about like what you were doing there.
Yeah. So as a digital marketing coordinator, I was handling social media for a lot of artists, helping develop campaigns. I met Kristen through this artist, Dorothy, who toured, and Kristen toured with them, and that's how we got connected. Basically anytime an artist wanted to put out anything, whether it was a album or a makeup line, we would help develop the marketing campaign. So coming up with ideas for social media, helping build websites for artists, making sure that anything that needed to go out was appropriately shared on the internet.
Basically. Well, it's good that Roc Nation had the resources to have someone like you to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a team effort. You know, there's a whole digital marketing team that got assigned to different artists. And when I started at Roc Nation, it was like the same year or maybe the year before they had just launched their sports division.
Right.
So I kind of saw some of that come up and was involved with that. And then as the sports department grew, they had people specifically handling that. And I was focused on music. It was really cool.
I mean, what's crazy is because you brought up makeup.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that Jessica Simpson makes the bulk of her money from clothing.
Yeah.
And not music. And it actually does. So a lot of people don't realize that, like, what you do with whatever 15 minutes you have or longer, you can launch to so many different. I mean, Jessica Alba, honest, like her, she doesn't act anymore. So it's cool. I've never actually heard someone saying like, I might have helped with Dorothy's makeup you know what I mean? I'm just saying Dorothy because my grandma's Dorothy and your connection with that. Shout out to Mima. But I guess when you said you moved to Los Angeles a year ago. Tell me about what inspired you to come out here, because obviously the three big cities for music are New York, LA, Nashville. Mm-hmm. Not to say you can't do a career in other places, but there's more people doing what you're doing in those three cities. Yeah. So why LA?
Yeah, I just wanted to like challenge myself and meet new people and kind of expand my network, which, you know, you're part of that for sure.
I am so honored that I didn't even expect a plug. Tune into Waldman's Words every Tuesday.
Yeah, so I came out here because Roc Nation also had an office here, so I was able to kind of transfer over and just expand, you know, my knowledge of the business.
I assume it was a smaller office than the one in New York.
It is a smaller office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you moved out here, like how did you do it? Did you, because I U-hauled it. Like, did you have enough stuff, or did you just like come with a backpack?
I shipped a bunch of boxes, and I came with a couple suitcases.
Did you know other people out here, really?
Yeah. I had a handful of friends like from college and stuff. So I stayed with a friend for a few weeks until I found my own place. And yeah.
So you do what you got to do, like, because exactly. There's all these people. This is hashtag advice. There's all these people like, oh, I only know a few people, or oh, I only have this. If you really want to fucking do it, you can do it. It's going to be hard, but you can do it.
Yeah, definitely.
So when you were out here, where did you live?
I was living in Mid-City for like the first 6 months, and now I'm over in Hollywood.
Word.
Yeah.
Where the magic happens. Mm-hmm. Mid-City. No, Hollywood. So I guess tell me about, besides this wonderful show, which is taking up approximately 50-something minutes of your life, what's a typical day in the life of you when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah. Try to stay healthy, you know, do some exercising, drink some water, and take my vitamins.
Okay. Vitamins.
Yeah, and then just try to help artists throughout the day and make sure that, you know, anything that needs to get done gets done.
But when you say help artists along the way, you're freelance. So do you work for yourself, or how does this work?
Yeah, I mean, right now I've been doing some freelance stuff for different artists. Basically, if you are coming out with an album and need a campaign, I'll help build out, you know, a website, develop marketing campaigns, and support social media as much as needed. So,
and that's a relatively new business. I mean, in the scope of like America,
Time. Well, no, yeah, I think it's really like digital marketing has just grown so much, and I, you know, got so much experience out of working at Roc Nation, you know, with incredible artists like Rihanna and J. Cole and Big Sean and Dorothy, you know, has really got to work with a lot of cool artists. And I love that there's, you know, low level of artists and megastars that you get to kind of assist with.
Well, that's what we have on Waldman's Words. We've got low level stars and major stars like Katie Stein on the show. No, but I mean, it's cool that you brought up two huge acts like Rihanna and Mumford and Sons on this show. And obviously they're huge, but they're, I would argue, very different markets. So it's cool that you're multifaceted. This is a plug on you.
Thank you. I really enjoy getting a variety of music in my life. So working with any kind of artist is really exciting. And I like being able to just help artists get their voice heard and get the music out there. And
well, how do you help your voice get heard as developing clients? Is it referrals? Is it just, do you have a, like, if you do have a website, please say it, or like whatever
right
you
now. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of referrals, you know, meeting people and trying to just get out there and meet new clients, and and just trying to learn new things and
learn new things in a new space.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You have to evolve, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the after working at Roc Nation for 4 years, coming out here with that company, I moved to Rostrum Records, and I was there for about 6 months.
Mod Song.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Put out that last Mod Song record, BB. Mm-hmm. And got to get some experience there as a marketing manager. And it was...
That's in the heart of Hollywood, that office.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was fun. Got to really, like, meet new people and work with some up-and-coming artists. And, yeah, now I'm kind of working on my own thing and figuring out what's next. And
do you have a team of people, or is the team of people you?
Team of people is me right now.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And learning, you know, just trying to take on whatever I can and looking for my next opportunity.
Without destroying your brain. Because you talked about the healthiness. So I think that that's something we should discuss now. So how do you stay, quote unquote, healthy or healthy?
Yeah, I think that balance with work is really important. So finding ways to keep sane in the music industry is super important.
In an insane industry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's yoga for you, you know, make sure you keep it up. And
Kelly, yoga I know is for you. Yes. I don't like it. Kelly's my wife. I know you're not Kelly. But if she's listening, which she probably, quote unquote, is. So, but yoga, I heard about this thing called goat yoga recently.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I haven't done it. It seems so intense.
I would be scared shitless the whole time.
I think I'd be like weirded out. Like, I feel like I couldn't focus on.
Same. I have trouble focusing on yoga when there's serenity, and having some random goat walk on my back or potentially defecate on me would scare the crap out
of me. Does that happen?
I how could it not happen?
Yeah, you're right. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, no, see, this is the most bright-eyed and bushy-tailed you've been. Like, yeah, but well, it's just, I don't know. That just scares me. For me, what's great, and by the time this airs, yesterday won't be yesterday. But I love living in Los Angeles, and that I can literally drive 10 minutes from me, go on a hike, put my phone on airplane mode, and just listen to music, because I don't get to do that enough. And that's my serenity, because I'm an artist manager, as you know, but and well, actually, if you listen to the show, you know that. And I'm constantly getting hit up every second for things large and small. And to do a better job as an artist manager, I have to have a healthy mind. And to have a healthy mind, I have to disconnect.
Yeah.
Do you really find the same thing?
Yeah, it's really important. I think I wasn't doing that enough in my first couple years. And moving out to LA was kind of a search for that balance little bit more, and it's definitely, it feels like it's a more balanced city, I think, because even just the time zone, you know, you start working early and then by the end of the day people are kind of checked out, and you don't have to be like
doctor on call.
Like working through dinners is like a little bit less common out here, I think, because working through breakfast is more common
in music. Yes.
Yeah.
My wife's father, my father-in-law, would not agree with you because he's a doctor. But Kelly and I, what we do is during dinners, we put our phones in the bedroom and we actually eat talk or watch TV, but not if someone wanted to contact us. I realized that, like, if someone was in a horrible accident, I would not be able to do anything other than call the police. So, like, there's nothing really life-saving I could do. Exactly. So I have to get away from that. And I think that's really important. And I'm glad that you spark this topic, because if you're listening to this show and you're trying to pursue a career in what she doesn't do, graphic design, or what she does do, digital marketing, or be an artist manager or be an artist or whatever, you are not going to be successful in that field if you don't take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You're not.
It's really important.
So, and that also goes hand in hand with Kristen's
thing. Yeah. She's inspiring.
Well, that's wonderful. And it's cool that you have that. So, what else do you do besides goat yoga? What else do you do?
Yeah, I can't do goat yoga.
I can't do it.
I definitely, you know, just try to keep healthy. In LA, you can get that hiking in anytime, so that's nice. I think that's kind of the gist of it. I don't really have too much of a health routine besides my vitamins and my yoga once in a while.
But that's more than most. Yeah. I was in New York, as you know, the best city in the world, which has the best food.
Yes.
And I probably gained about 70 pounds of bread weight. So lately I've actually tried, and I try not to say this publicly because I know that I'll sound annoying, the keto diet. I've been trying that. I'm also, my metabolism isn't what it used to be, but whatever works for you, works for you.
How's keto going? Is it tough?
Yeah, I like pizza, man. As we said, it's so tough.
Yeah.
I mean, Kelly said that she can make, this has been a lot of Kelly, which is nice. I love you, Kelly. But she has made cauliflower pizza.
Oh.
And we just went to Trader Joe's and bought cauliflower gnocchi. So it's definitely not going to be the same. And I love pizza, and I love pasta, and I love sandwiches. It's easier to eat things.
Does the cauliflower pizza cut it?
What?
Does the cauliflower pizza make the good pizza list?
It makes the pizza list. it makes the list of, you know what? Honestly, it can be done well, but if choosing between marginally good pizza and really good, Cauliflower pizza, I will obviously choose the former.
Yeah, of course.
But you know what? To each their own. Yeah. So I guess we have a little bit of time left. Tell me what you're listening to.
Yeah, sure. Do you know the Big Little Lies soundtrack? The music on that show is
Big
so
Little
good.
Lies is the HBO one with like Reese Witherspoon. Yeah. That show is fucked up.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But the music is really good. I have
Who's on the soundtrack?
They have Michael Kiwanuka, I think that's how you say it.
I'm shaking my head. I have no idea.
Yeah, he's kind of folksy. It's in the communion world. I don't know if you've heard of communion music.
I haven't, but please educate me.
I've always been a really big fan of that. It's like a label. Mumford & Sons is connected to it. It's like one of the guys from Mumford & Sons is like very involved with communion.
Mm-hmm.
They do like music nights in New York that I would always go to. I miss those in New York.
So I wish you grew up in like Laurel Canyon, L.A.
Yeah.
Like that would have probably been badass.
Yeah, probably.
Despite being L.A.
I love that the folk scene. And I like sort of pop punk stuff. I mean, that was my life in
high
school.
Yeah, you do.
For sure. And the bands like Walk the Moon that are kind of in that vein and the more poppy side now, I really love.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we've got a few left. Can you tell people how they can get a hold of you and check out your stuff? And again, I really appreciate you coming. Well, obviously from Massachusetts to New York, it's coming down. From Hollywood to here, it's coming up.
A little bit up.
Yeah.
Not too far.
Not too, but up enough.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So I guess how can people have you?
Yeah, my social media is SteinKatie, STEINKATIE. So that's Instagram and Twitter if you want to find me that way. LinkedIn, I guess, is another way.
Is LinkedIn, because I get so much nonsense on LinkedIn, but does that actually really help you?
I mean, it's a good place to like connect with people and look for jobs and look for new opportunities. You know, I think it's definitely can get some weird, random people connecting with you
who
aren't helpful, but
sign my band. Yeah. I get those messages. Yeah. Those are very helpful.
Yeah, I think Instagram and Twitter is probably the more accessible way to kind of connect with the community.
I found for lately there's been a lot of help on Facebook, believe it or not, in a lot of artist management groups. Is there a lot of that for your space as well?
Yeah, I've been really into the groups feature on Facebook lately. I think that they're doing a really good job with that and using the like music industry career networking group. You're in that one. That's a good one.
Oh, I'm in that one.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I'm in a few different groups that definitely help like kind of make you feel connected to the industry in a digital way. That's really helpful.
I mean, honestly, there's people that get jobs in those things for you, it'd be projects, right?
Yeah.
But people connect, people book tours on that. So it's pretty wonderful. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, open to meeting new people and getting new opportunities right now. So
I hope that people listening to the show learned a lot. I sure am very happy that we have you here. So thank you for coming. Thank you to Kristen. And I guess I'll just go down the bunch of guests we have on this wonderful show. We've got David Bakula, who works for the company Nielsen next week. So I honestly know less about Nielsen than I do about digital. So I'm really excited to have him on. We've got Leah Urbano, who is an artist manager at Crimson. She works in the heavy music space and she's a sweetheart, so I'm really happy to have her on. The following week, we've got Chris Hornbrook, and speaking of, I guess, the pop-punk Warped Tour world, he used to drum for the band Senses Fail, and he also played with Pierce the Veil. Poison the Well, another PT band, but very, very heavy. And the following week after that, we're actually recording on my father's birthday, we've got Mr. Ska, Tazy Phillips coming on the show. Katie, thank you very much for doing this. Everyone listening,
thank you.
And one more thing, you can tune in every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock our time zone, the time zone that Katie and I just recently joined, and it's not even recently for me anymore, and 8 o'clock for probably the majority of her family's time zone in New York, every single Sunday, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern. Shalom.